fourth case of the day, U.S. v. Swanson, 102178. Mr. Graziano.
May it please the court, I'm Paul Graziano from Rockford, Illinois. I'm representing Thomas Swanson, who is here before the court seeking a reversal of the district court's ruling on a motion to suppress statements and physical evidence. The reason we are seeking the reversal of that ruling is we believe that the district court erred in determining that post-arrest statements made by Mr. Swanson were not the product of interrogation. The district court concluded erroneously that the statements were volunteered. We have a situation in this case where Mr. Swanson was arrested in his front yard of his home pursuant to an arrest warrant that had been issued. At the time he was arrested, and for 45 minutes thereafter, the police officers involved, two of them, failed to provide Mr. Swanson with the so-called Miranda warnings. During that time, it is quite clear that Mr. Swanson was subjected to interrogation regarding the location, the possession, and the existence of firearms. That interrogation resulted in statements. More compelling is the fact that the police officers used as a prop an order, which is a most unusual order in the state of Illinois, requiring as a condition of bail that Mr. Swanson transfer to the police any firearms in which he had an ownership or possessory interest. Based on the failure to advise Mr. Swanson of his Miranda warnings, based on the use of the order to compel him to disclose the existence, the location, and the admission that these are guns which he might have a possessory or ownership interest in, it's our submission that the Fifth Amendment was violated and that Mr. Swanson's rights having been violated, his statement and the weapon involved should have been suppressed.
This order, what was the source of this? This guy was named Ford?
Sergeant Ford, yes, sir.
Did he go to the judge to this order together?
Well, Your Honor, in the record, Sergeant Ford appeared before a judge, Judge Brady of DeKalb County, Illinois, with an assistant state's attorney. They were seeking a warrant for possession of a firearm without a firearm owner's ID card for an event that happened a year before.
No.
At that time...
I'm sorry, just clear. A year before when he said he was going to rob a bank and said
yeah. Yes. See, this investigation started in April of 2008. At that time, Mr. Swanson was discovered to be in possession of a gun without a valid Illinois firearm owner's ID card. Prosecution was declined in April of 2008. Swinging forward to May of 2009, prosecution on the 2008 charge is approved by the DeKalb County State's Attorney. Sergeant Ford and an assistant state's attorney from DeKalb County appeared before a court, not in a courtroom, not anything that was transcribed or subject to electronic recording, and this unusual order creating as a condition of bail that Mr. Swanson transfer to the police any guns that he had an ownership or possessed, any firearms.
Yeah, I must say this is the first time I've heard or seen this kind of order about bail when you're not even in court. So you're not arrested, and then the court imposes certain conditions of bail.
Your Honor, I've been practicing in state court for about 35 years. I have never seen an order such as this. And if we look at Illinois statute, I doubt that it's a legal order. 725 ILCS 5110-10A5 allows for an order such as this only if you're charged with certain types of crimes, not the type of crime that Mr. Swanson was up.
In effect, it was used as a search warrant.
I believe so. And in the record, Your Honor, the police had no indication that Mr. Swanson was presently in possession of firearms. So they got a search warrant, in effect a search warrant, without any showing of any probable cause.
Can you tell me a little bit about the circumstances of Mr. Swanson's detention at the moment he made the statements respecting the weapon which was in the car?
Mr. Swanson was taken into custody at home, confronted with the court order, told as a condition of bail, you must transfer weapons, and also the police officer embellished it by adding not only firearms, but also saying BB guns or lookalikes. Mr. Swanson advised them of a pellet gun in a car. He was then taken from his...
To the other two guns under the bed.
Yes, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
He had all those before he left the house.
Right. I think there was two shotgun cases, but one shotgun.
Right.
He's taken to the police department and left in an interrogation room.
Was there anything oppressive about the room or
the record
confinement within the station?
The record does not establish anything unusual about the room.
He wasn't cold, and he wasn't subjected to any harsh lights or anything of that nature.
He was just
in a plain old room.
I'm not suggesting that there was any physical cruelty, Your Honor.
But was there any break in his contact with the detective and the statement that he made? It would appear that there was.
Well, Your Honor, yes, there was. He was left in custody in a police station. He was transported by...
I just want to add another fact because I'm interested. I want you to answer Judge Clevert's question. When he first got into the room, Ford didn't question Swanson when he first arrived either, right?
When Ford returned to the room, Ford accomplished other duties and then came to the police station.
Nobody questioned Swanson when he first got in the room. That's what I was trying to get further fact. But now, please go ahead. I just wanted to make sure I had that.
I'm not suggesting that there was any questioning. However, during that interim, Mr. Swanson is still subjected to the compulsion of the court order, which says you must transfer these firearms if you are going to be released on bail. That compulsion has not gone away. And, Your Honor, I would submit that compulsion is, as I believe we cited the Garrity case in our reply brief, compulsion can come not only by freezing an individual, overheating an individual, putting them under intense lights. It also can come by compelling them to respond. And that compulsion is the use of this court order, which is a very most unusual court order in the state of Illinois. I hope I'm addressing
the question. So the real focus of your concern is the court order rather than the failure of Officer Ford to apprise Mr. Swanson of any Miranda rights.
Your Honor, it's a combination of the two. The failure to advise excuses Mr. Swanson's not exercising his Fifth Amendment rights. That's the rule against that the Fifth Amendment is self-executing. The order is tantamount to compulsion. He has a court order. He's only got two choices, comply or not comply. Be truthful or not. And if you don't comply, then you are subject to incarceration.
So just so the circumstances in terms of this interrogation room, he was there for 45 minutes alone, right?
I'm not going to say exactly.
That amount of time. And then it was when Ford entered the room, Swanson said he wanted to be honest and comply with the court order.
That's correct. And the court order is obviously the genesis of his statement regarding the location of the weapon.
Well, the distinction, of course, these others were misdemeanors.
Right.
And then when you find a sawed-off shotgun, that's a felony.
A federal felony offense, yes. Your Honors, I'd like to reserve some time.
All right.
Thank you.
Mr. DeVoe?
DeVoe.
DeVoe. All right.
May it please the Court. My name is Andrew DeVoe, and I represent the United States. The defendant's voluntary statement to Sergeant Ford, when Sergeant Ford walked into that interrogation, when walked into that room, was not the product of police interrogation. Furthermore, when the statement was made, the defendant did not face a situation where he had no choice but to volunteer that statement or face a penalty.
So what about this turnover order? This very odd document that really seemed to be more like a search warrant in terms of what it was requiring of him when it got to when they got to his home.
We're going to first to answer the panel's question about the genesis of the order. The order was the record on page 19 of the hearing, of the suppression hearing. Sergeant Ford testified that the order, the genesis of the order, was the ASA, the Assistant State's Attorney, that attended along with Sergeant Ford in front of the court. In terms of the order itself, Your Honor, this order is not a search warrant. It was presented to the defendant. He was asked if he had any weapons.
This but what about counsel's argument that it didn't even comply with Illinois law? This kind of turnover order wasn't even appropriate for this kind of situation or this type of violation.
Well, Your Honor, the district court determined that finding was not necessary for this decision, and counsel's I've not briefed that issue, that particular issue, but I don't think in this instance that order resulted in the defendant being interrogated or facing a penalty that runs afoul of the Supreme Court's decision in Minnesota versus Murphy or this court's decision in Cranley.
But wasn't the point of the turnover order and Sergeant Ford's related statements designed to get Swanson to admit he had guns? And if you follow it to its logical conclusion, doesn't that mean they were also designed to get information from him, incriminating statements?
Your Honor, they were designed to
I mean, it is true. They could have asked him the question. He could have remained silent and just gone and got the guns and handed them, and there would be no statement. But that's really quite unusual that that kind of situation would happen when you get an order like that.
But, Your Honor, he also had the opportunity to remain silent, as he did with respect to the shotgun at the house.
Advised of his rights at the house, was he?
He was not, Your Honor.
Right. So how did he know he had a right to remain silent when he was given this order? And it was called a turnover order, and it said you have to turn this over or you won't get bail.
Well, Your Honor, this order, when you look at the true penalty cases that where this court and other courts have found it to be a situation where not exercising your right has been excused, like the defense cites Garrity. That's a case where you have an order where those police officers are explicitly threatened with a penalty of being fired, and it's specifically tied, Your Honor, to not invoking their right not to incriminate themselves. Those are the types of cases where the court has found that an order or that provision is the type of penalty where the defendant has no choice but to offer up that statement.
Are you saying that Mr. Swanson did not face any penalty if he held on to the weapon and was seeking bail?
Your Honor, saying that the defendant had the right to remain silent with respect to this firearm. In fact, when you look at the key point in time for this analysis, which is when the defendant volunteered the statement, when Sergeant Ford walks in the room, he's been sitting there, as Your Honors are asking, by himself in the room, there's no evidence of any questioning, and volunteers this statement. At that time, there was no indication there would be any further questioning about any firearms. When you look at the conversation at the house, it's very important that the officer asked him, are there any other firearms? He says no. And the conversation promptly ends. He's transported to the police station.
Exactly. The conversation promptly ends. There's no explanation of anything. He doesn't understand necessarily. I mean, was he even told, so we're taking you down to the police station and we're placing you under arrest?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so he was told that.
Yes, Your Honor.
But he doesn't know what's going to happen at the police station. He's not advised about his right to remain silent when he gets into the interrogation room or even on the ride to the car, because then maybe the impact of being asked several times, do you have any guns? We have a turnover for guns. Then, you know, maybe at the outset or even as he's leaving the house, if he was told that, then the link might have been broken. But he basically, there's no conversation. The whole time they get there, he's in the interrogation room 45 minutes. And then Ford walks in, the same one who showed him the turnover order, who asked him several times, are there any more, are there any more? His last statement is, no, there are no more. All that's left, as far as he knows, he's still dealing with the bail situation, right? Nobody clarified that for him, did they?
Your Honor, that point was not explicitly conveyed to him. But the context of the conversation, this is a defendant who was described by multiple witnesses as cooperative and quiet, calm, even appreciative for the way that the officers, and this is important in terms of the context, approached him and suggested his four-year-old son to go in the house so they could talk.
There's no question that the officers weren't kind. I mean, and they were pleasant to him and everything, but nobody gave him his rights. Nobody provided him with this information. That's what my concern is.
Your Honor, I
don't know if it was enough, this 45-minute pause in this thing when nobody had given him his rights when he got there. And at least he did know he was under arrest. So then bail would have been an issue if you're under arrest.
Well, Your Honor, even if this court were to find that this statement was a product of custodial interrogation, that there's custodial interrogation at the house and it continued, that statement, the firearm, and then the subsequent written statement would still come in. The firearm would come in under United States versus Patain. That statement, defense attempts to distinguish Patain in the brief by suggesting the statement is not voluntary. But there's no indication of psychological games by the police officers or any sort of physical abuse. The district court, after hearing four witnesses and all of the evidence, including a direct, a vigorous cross-examination and a redirect examination of Sergeant Ford, specifically credit his testimony that when he walked in, he spontaneously volunteered this statement. And that statement then, even if it's found to be in violation of Miranda, it was voluntary.
So you're saying the so-called turnover order did not have an ongoing impact on Mr. Swanson?
It did not, Your Honor. It did not so much so that it constituted this ongoing custodial interrogation. There are cases, certainly, that the idea that this order, he might exercise his Fifth Amendment right, but the idea that this order could follow him around like a dark cloud and wherever he was would continue to interrogate him for purposes of the Innis analysis, for purposes of the issue we're talking about in this case, which is, was he subject to police interrogation at the time he made the statement? That's exactly right, Your Honor, so that this order did not constitute police interrogation such that when Sergeant Ford walked into the room and he spontaneously volunteered that statement, that statement can be found to be the subject of custodial interrogation.
And in your view, it doesn't matter that this ongoing cloud was legal or illegal in terms of the turnover order.
I think in this context, Your Honor, for purposes of the custodial interrogation analysis, I think that that's correct, because you're focused on whether or not a reasonably objective viewer is looking at the police action, words or action. And the point is, there are no words or action that he responds to when he makes his voluntary statement. That's exactly what the district court found. And if you look at the cases that the defense cites, it really draws the contrast for what this court is talking about. Like in Killebrew, that is cited.
Let me go back now. Is there any dispute about Swanson's condition, that he was being treated for depression, anxiety, and bipolar condition, and had been on off his medication and showing signs of paranoia at the time this whole thing happened?
There's no dispute that in the written statement he says he is off of his medication for those. But there's also, Your Honor, multiple witnesses talking about his demeanor, his responsiveness, multiple questions in the transcript from the motion to suppress about his mental state at the time, at the operative time. And it's that, again, throughout, cooperative. He receives his Miranda rights at the station. And again, like he had throughout the day, Yes, Your Honor. I'm just suggesting that throughout the entire course of the proceedings, his state of mind, the observation of everyone who observed him was that he was cooperative, calm, and was not suffering under any sort of mentally impaired at that time.
Let me ask you a different question. In terms of the state's case, it's Mr. Swanson's statement and the gun that were the evidence here, and the government would have really had no case against him without the unregistered firearm. You agree with that, right? If they didn't have the unregistered firearm, if they'd gone to the car and didn't find it.
Well, the state's case was originally based, Your Honor, on that first firearm back in April 2008. That's what the arrest warrant was based on, that firearm.
But ultimately, he was charged with what was found under the car.
Federally, he was charged. Yes, Your Honor.
Right. And so then why should this evidence not be suppressed under a Supreme Court case such as Doe, which holds that the Fifth Amendment is designed to prevent government cases that are built in whole or in part on disclosures from the accused?
Because, Your Honor, in this case, Your Honor, we have a situation where he chose to speak. That's the point, is that he volunteered this statement. And as the district court found, because these two exceptions do not apply, his decision to speak cannot be undone. And so the statement and the firearm were both admissible. And therefore, Your Honor, we would respectfully request that the decision...
No, go ahead.
First of all, the first encounter at the house, if he hadn't, he had this disclosure, whatever it's ordered, bail and all, whatever, if he had gone there with a search warrant, and legitimate search warrant, there was evidence that he'd done here at his home, at what point would he get some Miranda rights?
At what point would he? Your Honor, I think that if a search warrant, just a search warrant is executed, if we don't have an arrest warrant, I think that a search warrant could be executed without giving someone their Miranda warnings.
Mm-hmm. But it said, at what point? When he started saying, are there any other guns, any guns, there's an interrogation going on here. With the search warrant, as soon as they started asking, do you have any guns, et cetera, would it normally be required to give Miranda warnings?
Your Honor, if he was in custody,
not in custody, in the house, where they encounter him with a search warrant instead of this thing.
If it didn't meet the definition that the court has established for both custody and interrogation, then he wouldn't have to technically be given his Miranda warnings. It's the combination of custody and interrogation. And in this case, the government has conceded that it is custodial interrogation at the time at the house. But that when the statement was volunteered, that custodial interrogation had been stopped.
See, what bothers me, all that said, when he got to he's in the room, et cetera, and then he spontaneously says there's another gun in the car after they've searched it, and you breathe. Yeah, he could have gone, if he hadn't said anything, could have gone on and got the bail, and nobody ever said a thing. If they found a gun in the car that was just another unregistered weapon, that just expands the felony, I guess. I mean, sorry, the misdemeanor. But finding the sawed-off shotgun, that's a felony, and that's serious. And even, I understand, getting out of prison pretty soon.
Yes, sir. And counsel, we were discussing, I believe, in 2 weeks approximately.
Yeah, so now he's going to be a felon, convicted felon, and can't possess a gun, can't do other things, whereas before it would just been a misdemeanor. And that's where this becomes more serious than just service, spontaneous. So that's what I'm just concerned about, this order and what it really represents as opposed to spontaneous response, because he said he wants to tell the whole truth, I guess. That's why he did it. Maybe think about it for an hour. Gee, I could tell the whole thing. Maybe did he know it was a sawed-off shotgun? I guess he did.
Yes, sir. In his written statement that he gave at the Hinckley Police Department, which was several hours, so they went from the house to the Sandwich Police Department, and then later they had lunch at the Hinckley Police Department. He did a question and answer where he wrote the answers, and he indicates in there that he used a saw to saw several inches of the barrel.
All right. Thank you. How much time? 1 minute? We gave him a little extra time. I'll give you 2 minutes.
Your Honor, I was just going to say, unless there were any other questions, I will rest on the arguments.
All right. And you...
I do have one question, and it relates to Mr. Swanson's condition, the depression and his mental state. Are you claiming any fragile state of being at the time the statement was made?
Your Honor, I didn't litigate it that way at the motion to suppress. I believed, and I argued that Mr. Swanson's Fifth Amendment rights were violated by the failure to advise him of his Miranda warnings and the use of this order. I called it a seizure order, not a turnover order. That's the way it was litigated, and that's the way it has been presented on appeal. With regard to the exceptions, the government in its argument talked about two exceptions to the self-executing rule, the penalty exception and the Miranda exception. Under both, this man was compelled by that court order to divulge the existence, the location, and his interest in the gun. That violated the Fifth Amendment. And the fact that he was sitting in an interrogation room contemplating, what do I do about this, without being advised, not knowing that he's going to make bail or not make bail, led to a statement that led to the discovery of evidence, which we believe should have been suppressed. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, thank you for your fine briefs and fine oral argument. We'll take the case under advisement. Mr. Graziano, you are on the panel for the Federal Defender's Office.
I am actually a branch chief of the Federal Defender's Office.
Well, it's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
But we thank you both for your fine arguments and your briefs. We'll take the case under advisement.